Okay, we just heard a song by Cashew Cook. That's off his latest album, Sweet Home Sweet. And he happens to be in town. He's here from East Machias, Maine. And he's going to be performing tonight at the Blue Dragon Cafe that's out in Clayville. And so if you have any questions about that or any other information we mention here, you can call in and reach us privately at 859-4200. Or if you'd like to be on the air, you can call in at 859-4561. And we'll probably be doing a lot of information today. So if you'd like to get your pen and pencil and paper ready to take down some email, some websites, and telephone numbers, please prepare. Mike, you have some information on some new legislation, correct?
Yes, Peter. Thank you. Today I was a recipient of an email from an organization who I'm on their mailing list. It's the Environmental Business Association of New York State. And they received an email from an assembly person. Her name is Donna Lepardo, and her district is in Binghamton. And I wanted maybe just quickly go over the email that she sent to the Environmental Business Association and then read a little bit about this legislation that was passed in the New York State Assembly last week, and then come back to her email. But her communication says, I just wanted to let you know that the New York State Assembly unanimously passed a bill that I sponsored last week, and it's called the State Green Building Construction Act. And the number is A11537. And if you go online to the New York State Gov website and type in that act, you can read what that's all about. But in summary, and maybe just as important, in looking at the assembly and who voted for it, there were 137 votes cast, and 137 voted for it, and no votes against it.
Wonderful.
Which was pretty amazing. But the purpose of this bill was to require all new construction and substantial renovation projects undertaken by the state to comply with the United States Green Building Council LEED Silver Rating Program. Now, we'll talk a little bit about USGBC and the LEED program. Because LEED is really the organization that defines and measures what a green building is. So we'll come back to that. But the summary of the provisions of this bill are that the energy law is amended to require state buildings to comply with the United States Green Building Council LEED Design Silver Rating Level and incorporate the use of life cycle cost analysis for the improvement of green building construction practices. In addition, the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, in consultation with the NYSERDA, and we'll talk a little bit about NYSERDA because they affect all of us, will oversee this bill. Some justification. Several states already have policies that require green building practices for public buildings, and those include Arizona, California, Pennsylvania, and Washington. So we're not the first in this regard. But green buildings use resources including energy, water, materials, and land more efficiently and effectively, and provide a healthier environment for working, learning, and living. And green buildings minimize the negative environmental consequences by lessening changes to the natural environment. Using recycled and recyclable materials, incorporating renewable and energy-efficient power generation systems, using wastewater resources more efficiently, and producing less waste. Green buildings provide employees with a healthier indoor work environment by effectively controlling air ventilation systems and using alternative paints, finishes, adhesives, furniture, and fabrics that do not negatively affect air quality. And by building green, the state can save money by reducing construction costs and create sustainable buildings, which would foster new developments in green technologies. So that's essentially the bill that was unanimously passed that essentially says that all buildings constructed by the state, any significant building or renovation, significant renovation, will have to be built to those standards, which really is pretty amazing. Now, here's the second half of the email that I think
intelligent.
You may be interested in. In her communication, she said, "I would greatly appreciate it if you would inform your membership of this development. At this point, I am trying to find a majority member who would be willing to advance this issue in the state Senate. I have had no luck so far, so your suggestions or offers of assistance would be appreciated." So if anyone, now I know that Senator Meyer is head, believes he's heading for Washington, so he's probably not somebody to lean on to try to get him to take up lead on this bill. But if you do know of one of the state senators in the majority, we would ask that maybe you contact them and see if you could get them to sponsor the bill in the Senate.
That'd be wonderful, yeah. So it sounds like we're taking the first step, and this is only the day after you've received the email.
this was kind of a surprise. It was timely, and it's great to see it. Now, why we got 100% in the Assembly to vote on this, and we can't get anybody in the Senate to take it on, is, you know, raises some questions and concerns. But that's where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a right move, and I know, and I've heard that the New York State Education Department is also trying to adopt a high performance building program, wherein all of the schools that get built in the future will be considered high performance, and really that comes out of the Green Building Council specifications.
Great. I had brought this article with me that speaking about a woman who is in Vestal, New York. She is an architect, and she has designed a house for herself to be an example to others of how people can begin building green. And she has mentioned that when people do things like straw bale construction or cob houses or these different types of alternative houses, usually it's something very small because it's something that the person who is interested in making the house builds themselves, and they don't necessarily have a background in this. But she has designed her building in a way that it would be lend itself to be duplicated by other more commercial builders to try to promote the idea of building in this environmentally friendly way.
You know, let me. I've been in the profession. I've been licensed in New York State for 36 years, and I probably came into the profession at an interesting time where passive solar became very popular. And there were lots of homegrown ways in which we could incorporate passive solar in our homes, and none of them really took off. For the most part, what happens is you get somebody who has a passion for it, and they'll build a building somewhere out in the country that meets their own values and requirements, but they don't necessarily become mainstream.
Right.
And I can't imagine a home whose walls are built with hay bales being the house of choice, say in a development in New Hartford, New York,
right,
or in Clinton. So we have to really take a close look at what it means and how we adopt green, whether it's for a home or a business. But with regards to homes, I know that there's a lot of information out there on green issues, but there is no definition. There's no organization in this country that has really defined green buildings for single-family construction. USGBC is working on one, but they don't currently have one. They have a draft of a plan, and you might even be able to find that draft on their website, usgbc.com. And I would recommend anyone who is interested in green buildings to go online to USGBC, because it's really, as I'd mentioned earlier, the organization that is defining and measuring what green buildings are all about.
Mm-hmm.
So hay bale walls, I don't know that it's going to catch on.
Right.
Actually, I know that there's issues of combustibility. So a hay bale wall has to be encapsulated so that, you know, you can't ignite the hay.
And do you know anything about moisture getting in with the hay and like molding inside there, or mildew or decomposition of the hay?
I would only guess that they must have to encapsulate it, much like they do today. They wrap a building to keep the moisture out.
Okay.
One of the downsides of wrapping our building so tight now is the amount of fresh air that we have inside our buildings and homes, and it's important that when we really tighten up our buildings, that we provide a significant ability to ventilate the home.
Mm-hmm.
I just am reminded that in America, we spend about 90% of our time indoors, and our indoor environments are 100 times more polluted than outside. So we have to be careful of the environments that we put ourselves into, or have good systems that provide air quality and ventilation, so that we don't hurt ourselves in the long run.
I've been looking at homes recently and going all over town looking at these various houses, and I keep getting inside them, and there's all these musty, mildewy smells inside these houses that are for sale, and a lot of them have water problems in the basement and things like that. So
it's pretty typical, but we should look at our older buildings. Actually, the greenest building is a building we don't have to build. So if we can find a building that is structurally sound, there's a lot we can do with it to address those kinds of problems. Sometimes when a building has been empty for a while and there hasn't been temperature maintained, it will tend to get musty and like that. But if you take a good close look at what you're buying and know that, and maybe get some professional advice on how well it could be brought up to standard, that's not a bad way to go. The other advantage is moving into a home in a already developed area, so you're not having to strain on the utilities or building new roads into a house and all the things that go along with new construction.
Right. So what are some tips that you could give to people? I know some various organizations that are just starting out and they're looking for buildings, and what I'm thinking of is what types of things can be done with old buildings to make them more efficient for heating and cooling.
Excuse me, Peter. Well, typically older buildings are not well insulated. I'm reminded of the New York State office on Genesee Street in downtown Utica. That building was built using the heat from the lights to heat the building.
I just heard that the other day, and I thought that could... Somebody just told me that last night, and I couldn't believe it.
When they built that building, the cost of electricity was very low.
Uh-huh.
So it would seem to make sense.
Huh.
Today it makes absolutely no sense to do something like that, given that in upstate New York we have the highest electric rate in the country, I believe, if not the highest. New York City, I think, is higher, but upstate is right behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So using electricity to heat a building is not the thing to be doing. So you have to. So back to your question about what we do to retrofit old buildings or make them more serviceable. I think probably the insulation is one of the first things that come to mind, and there are lots of ways to introduce insulation in an existing wall. There are a lot of good contractors in the area who are able to do that, and that would be probably the first thing you do. The second thing would be to look at windows. A lot of the older windows are single glazed windows, and we lose an awful lot of energy from poorly constructed or older windows that have leaks in them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of our air infiltration or heat escapes through the windows. So that might be the second place to look at.
Now, besides replacing a single-pane window with a double-pane window, what is the role of having a heavy curtain in front of a single-pane window play? I mean, would that save you a lot of energy if you're covering your window with a heavy curtain at night?
Well, at night, it does the job. And during the day, when you open the curtains...
Oh, I see.
If it's on the south side and you've got some sun, why, it can introduce some energy, heat energy, solar energy. So it has some advantages. But we want to be careful about the kind of the quality of the environment that we want to live in, and limiting ourselves to a cave-like environment to stay warm is not really what we ought to be doing, nor do we have to do that anymore. We used to think that we had to do that, but there are so many things that have been introduced in technology that are energy-saving that if we spend the time to look at it and look for them, we can enhance our living.
I read something about NASA had created that new material, and they used it something. They blasted it at that comet or something, and it's this thing that almost has no weight to it, but it's a large volume, and it's like a glass. And the way that the molecules are structured, there's a lot of space between them, so it insulates very well. Have you heard anything about this?
No, I haven't.
I don't know what I forgot what it's called.
I don't think it's probably arrived in the building industry yet.
Sure.
But
yeah.
If it's cheap enough, it'll probably show up.
I think that's the problem now, is that it's not cost-effective the way it's being manufactured now, but something like a one-inch cube of it could hold the weight of a car on top of it. And it's a translucent material, and it's a really great insulator.
I had a chance to attend a seminar about 2 weeks ago where this engineer from Canada was describing how they're using the mass of a building to heat and cool a building, and have managed to almost eliminate any need for heat. Now, this is in Canada.
Wow.
And very little air conditioning, as a matter of fact. And with the technology that they're using is they're putting air inside cores. It's actually a precast plank. They pull the air through the plank at night to cool the plank, and then that cool concrete is used to cool off the building during the day. And the heat that the occupants and the lights and the computers provide is enough to keep the building warm all the time. Even more amazing is that they provide 100% ventilation.
Uh-huh.
You think about our the way we design our mechanical systems today, we recirculate a lot of air.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking that it's more energy efficient to do it, to heat our buildings that way. But what we're doing is we're just pushing all of the pollutants around the building. And, you know, if your fellow worker has a cold, why, you can be sure that what he's got is going to get passed to you eventually.
Right.
So being able to heat a building and still provide 100% outside air is kind of amazing.
Yeah, that does sound amazing.
And it's worth following up on.
So the buildings in that case are built with these concrete pieces that are hollow inside?
It's a standard form of technology. It's been around a long time. The plank is about 8 inches or 10 inches thick, and it has cores in it to keep the weight down. And they have figured a way how to move the air through those cores.
Hmm.
So they move.
So the core is just an empty chamber.
That's all it is. lined with concrete, and the concrete does not support mold. So they haven't had any problems with that, like we have had with some ductwork.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one of many technologies that people are now looking at to solve our global warming problem.
Mm-hmm.
We should talk a little bit about global warming.
Sure, I'd love to.
And the role of buildings in that. Why don't we take a break, and then when we come back, we can talk about that.
Okay, wonderful. So you are listening to Pete Bianco and Mike Van Strander. He's my visiting architect for the day, telling us some information. And now we'll hear a song again by Cashew Cook. He's going to be playing tonight at the Blue Dragon Cafe in Clayville. We just heard a song by Jenny Penny. That's a song about Sylvan Beach. Before that, we heard a song by Cashew Cook, and that's Morning Sun, sun spelled S-O-N. Now back here again with Mike Van Strander telling us about some architecture and different ways of heating and cooling buildings was our last topic. If you'd like to reach us here at the station, you can call in. The number is 859-4200 if you'd like to reach us off the air, or 859-4561 if you would like to get on the air. And there was just in the last thing that we were speaking about, I wasn't completely sure how that heating and cooling was working with the cores and the cement. But you were telling me a little bit off the air how the heat that's been stored in the concrete warms up cold air as it's being pulled in from the outdoors.
During the day, air is circulated through the concrete cores and pulls off the heat from the people that are in the building, from the lights and from the equipment, the computers and so forth, and it stores that heat. It transfers that heat into the concrete before it's exhausted to the outside. At night, when the air is cooler, it introduces cooler air into the cores and stores that for the use the next day when the building is occupied again. The feature in Canada is they have an incentive to use electricity in an off-peak time, so they use that off-peak time to add additional cooling into the cores. So it's a very efficient system when they finally get it all worked out.
That's excellent.
Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about global warming because it's probably, as much as any issue, prompted interest in buildings and how we design buildings and in the whole green building issue. There was an architect in the 70s who wrote a book on passive solar. His name was Ed Masria, and Ed is still practices, and he has an office in New Mexico. And I heard Ed speak last year at an AIA convention. That's the American Institute of Architects. It was a convention in the state, and he was a keynote speaker. And he presented global warming and the role of architects in solving global warming like I had never had it presented to me before. And the thing that impressed me more than anything else was to learn that half of the problem of global warming is as a result of the buildings. And the amount of energy it takes to build and heat and cool buildings contributes to half of the CO2 and the greenhouse gases that are creating this global warming problem. He had some really interesting satellite photographs of how the ice caps were melting and glaciers were melting and what would happen when we, for each degree of temperature rises on the planet. And by the way, in the last 50 years, the temperature has risen, I think it's 0.7 degrees Fahrenheit. And 2 degrees centigrade is going to create an awful lot of problems on the planet. So we have a real problem. And if we're going to solve it, we have to do something about the way we design and construct and operate our buildings. And given that buildings are responsible for half of the global warming or contribute to global warming, we've got to work hard at it. There is an initiative now to reduce the amount of energy that goes into heating and cooling buildings by 50% in the next 4 years. That is a huge undertaking. Mm-hmm. It's been signed on by the American Institute of Architects, and it's a challenge to its membership to get on board and start to solve this problem. By way of the other things that contribute to global warming, another 25% of the problem is because of industry and in manufacturing, and the last 25% is for transportation. SUVs take a lot of heat because of the terrible gas mileage that they have, but in fact, SUVs only account for about 8% of that problem, and even if we took away everybody's SUV, they'd be driving something else. So the answer isn't SUVs. They're part of the solution, but they will not solve the problem. The problem will be solved by those who are designing and constructing buildings.
It really seems like we need to attack the problem from every angle that we can, because it's, you know, such a timely issue that we need to try to reduce energy use in all the areas.
We really have to. You know, we have used about 75% of the oil that we have in the United States. We are working on our last 25% of oil reserves that we have in the United States. Globally,